Welcome to Follow Your Kind Podcast, a show where we explore the meaning of kindness and how we can express it in our daily lives. My name is Christina, and I'm your host.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Follow Your Kind Podcast, a show where we explore the meaning of kindness. And today I'm very excited to introduce to you Jacob Acqua, and we will be talking about mindfulness, self-exploration, and authenticity, as I just learned. Hi, Jacob.
Hi, how are you?
Good. So I just have to note your name to start with. The first time I learned your last name, I was like, well, of course his last name is Acqua. I mean, how much more perfect of a name can you have if you're going to lead a meditation?
Why does that?
I don't know, because I think Acqua, I have an association with, I mean, water, obviously, but like the serenity, and every, I don't know, meditation or mindfulness book, I imagine, is usually that still surface of water with like a little bit of ripple, but maybe that's going away, or that's becoming still. So for some reason, water and meditation always come together for me.
Yeah, and especially like you think of tea and how meditative tea is as well, and it's like the root of it is water.
Yeah,
I think that's really interesting. I've never thought about the connection of Acqua to meditation, because now I'm living in a life currently where meditation is something that is such a big part of my identity, and obviously Acqua is as well. And that's so cool that was your first association, because I never really thought about it like that. It's awesome.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, yeah, I thought it was absolutely a perfect coincidence, but, you know, there are no coincidences. Yeah. Okay, well, let's start with your story. Why don't you tell us, how did you evolve and came to meditation? Because being as young as you are, I don't think as many people take a full advantage of meditation, mindfulness practice nowadays. So I think you definitely have a head start. And yeah, I'm curious how that came about.
Yeah, I definitely feel like I have a leg up, and I'm really grateful for that. It actually came about through, I think, a lot of people who are on the spiritual path or interested in wellness in general, a lot of times have to take a step back from a period or an experience with difficulty. And with me, that's really where it started. I had a really life-altering experience where I had to leave school. I had a difficulty with mental illness. I had to take a whole year off from school. I went home and had to regroup. And thankfully, with support of amazing friends, family, you know, doctors, therapists, people who just supported me in such a powerful way, plus reading the book, The Power of Now. That book was by Eckhart Tolle, if anyone knows about that book. It is honestly one of the most life-changing reads that I've ever read. And it just came to me at a perfect time when I started to feel better from depression. I just immediately jumped into that book, and it resonated with me on such a deep level. And after I had about 5 months where I was feeling really crappy, to be honest, and then it was crazy. It was like a night and day switch where I started to feel better, I started to heal. I was also healing from a broken heart, so there were a lot of things that went into it, but what ended up happening was it was like the clouds parted. I was just so grateful to be alive, and just I felt this, you know, immense sense of gratitude, immense sense of just connection to everything. It was like my therapist was describing it as like you feel like you're in a pink cloud. And so I had to understand like what was actually happening to me. Why was I feeling like this? And The Power of Now offered this amazing explanation that when I was happy, when I was this popular college student who was living, you know, extremely extroverted, happy life. Like what happened was I got so identified as that is who I am. This is who I am, this positive, powerful, you know, interesting, quote unquote, person. But when I felt depressed, all of that was gone. And then, so then I was like, who am I? I'm nothing. But that's not true. You're not all of those things. You're not all your personality traits. You are a being. You are, you know, presence. You are awareness who has personality traits. And those things change. Those things will shift throughout your lifetime. So you can't dedicate all of your identity. You can't say who, you can't base who you are on things that are going to change, because, well, you can, but they will ultimately cause you difficulty. They'll ultimately cause you hardship. And that's what happened to me. And it took me losing everything, or thinking that I lost everything, because I still had so many amazing things. I had such a beautiful and loving family. I have, you know, incredible privilege and wealth and the support financially that I needed to, you know, get by. I had, you know, I don't live in a family where mental illness is stigmatized. Like, there's so many things that I have, and I didn't think I had anything. And it took me feeling like I lost everything to know that I have everything that I need. So just learning to identify with that which I am, which is unchanging, which is unmovable, which is peaceful, which is loving. And from there, I just knew I had stuff to share with others. And that's what really started everything, all of my efforts with wellness. I knew I had stuff to share with others. And these realizations that were just coming to me from all the things that I was reading. From there, I was ready to go out into the world and to share. But while I was sharing with others, I still was always looking within to discover more deeply and to reaffirm and to connect and never lose what was that inner deep clarity.
Mm-hmm. This is so amazing. And I'm still, what the few things that stand out for me is definitely the identifying with the traits that, or the things that we surround ourselves with, or the things that other people tell us we are, that we begun to identify with. So getting really attached to the ego and thinking that the way we see things is the way things really are, and being able to step away and detach from that is really, really, really powerful. And I remember reading The Power of Now for the first time, and the thing that stood out for me, like the one phrase that I think changed my practice, was be the observer. And it's that, like, kind of inception, you know, step back and step back and watch the stepper back. And it's so powerful, because there are so many things that are kind of intercepting with our thinking, but ultimately we're not our minds, and we're not our thoughts. We're the space in between of all of that. Yeah. And it's very counterintuitive. How do you move from that place where, and I also like how you use the phrase feeling like you lost everything. So not losing everything, but feeling like you lost everything. And that's another thing, because I can definitely relate to some of the experiences that you're sharing, that sometimes our emotions feel so overwhelming that it's very hard to see past them. But then once you're able to watch the observer, and once you realize that you're not your emotions, they're valuable information, but you are not your emotions. And once you're able to get that perspective, it everything completely switches. So how do you transition from feeling like you lost everything to building up the courage enough to step out of yourself and offer yourself as a service to others?
That's a great question. It really just came naturally, and in a way that I just have this natural extrovertedness. I don't know if it it came to me from my, I think it came to me from my family, from my parents. My parents are both doctors and they serve the community in a way that I just always had this deep intuition to connect with and help others. So as soon as I felt like I had this powerful, life-changing knowledge or whatever experience, I felt instantly compelled. It was just like a, knowing that this is what I have to do. It wasn't like I don't want to say what it's not courageous because I don't want to say it's not courageous because I do think it is courageous. But it's almost beyond me. It's like something's flowing through me in a sense.
You're channeling it. So you're not doing it. It's being done through you.
Yeah. It feels more like that, I would say. Mm-hmm. For sure.
And what was your learning journey like? Like what, how do you learn how to help others? I mean, power of now is the first step, but what was your path afterwards?
Yeah. So that when I first started reading The Power of Now, that was about 3.5 years ago now. So from then, I read just like a madman. So reading was a major thing. I read a lot about Eastern spirituality, New Age spirituality, meditation, mindfulness, wellness. And just I dove so deep into it and started practicing on my own. I started meditating using the app Headspace. So that was a major part of my process and just actually meditating. And building my own practice and just getting really deep into that. And then once I came back to school, I was able to come back to school, thankfully. I didn't mention that, but I actually graduated since, which is beautiful. I graduated in May.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, it's surreal. And I met tons of like-minded people who were interested in wellness and mindfulness and being healthier and happier. And so we formed a community that grew together. And I think that in order to really immerse yourself in order to really learn and embody teachings, you have to immerse yourself in the culture of wellness and the culture of, it's like, if you want to go play guitar, I'd be like, go hang out with some great guitarists. Like hang out with people who are living it.
Mm-hmm.
Because then like someone, they talk about all the different sages throughout history and they talk about not only the things that they said, but the way that they live is just as equally valuable teachings.
Wow. That's powerful.
Thanks. Yeah. And so I think being at Emory as well, they're like the religion department, the professors and other departments are just stacked with people who are just titans and spiritually and have had practices for 30 plus years. And so being around that as well, being around Emory's CBCT, which is cognitively based compassion training, Emory having, that's coming out of the Tibetan meditation traditions, having monks on campus that I've become friends with, Tibetan monks who are there at Emory studying science. That is just ridiculous. Like, how is that? Like, it's just so synchronous and so beautiful. And so, yeah, just being immersed in, it's like practice and theory are the two wings of the bird. But if a bird had three wings, I would say practice, theory, and culture.
Maybe that's like a tail.
A tail.
It's important for direction.
Cultures for direction. Exactly.
No, that is so true. Hang out with people who are living it.
Mm-hmm.
That is, yeah, because it's not enough to just talk about it. Yeah, you do have to live it. You have to lead by example. And then another thing that comes up to me as you were speaking, I think it's in order, and I think I mentioned to you too before, but in order to really know something, you have to teach it to someone. You have to be forced to explain it to someone.
Yes.
And I believe that bet that's probably also part of your practice with having to lead meditations. I bet it also deepens your practice. But tell us a little bit more about the Good Vibe Tribe, because I think that's an incredible community and just like it's so cool that you started it.
Yeah. So yeah, I started with a few of my friends when I was in the process of coming back to school, kind of climbing out of the hole that I was in a sense. I had all of these quotes. I always talk about the quotes because Good Vibe Tribe really started with all of these quotes from these books that I was reading. And I was like, this is a great quote. I wish everyone could read this. And so I just started sending out just massive texts to people. It was ridiculous. Like there's got to be a more efficient way to do this. So what ended up happening was we created a GroupMe, which is like a massive group chat in an app.
Mm-hmm.
So we created a GroupMe for wellness content for different people to post quotes, articles, videos. And so that ended up growing. By the time I came back to Emory, like 100 people. Now we have almost 400 people after about 3 years, which is mind-boggling. But after about a semester of having this group, it grew so organically through word of mouth. Anyone can add anyone to this GroupMe. People were like, we got to start meeting in person. Like, this is amazing. And so first it was going to be Emotional Intelligence Initiative. That was like what it was going to be called, because that was the best name I could think of. But one of my friends who actually transferred from Maryland, they had started a group there. It was a little bit different, called the Good Vibe Tribe.
Mm-hmm.
So she transferred. She started at Maryland, and then she helped start at Emory, and we took that name because it was great.
Mm-hmm.
And then we
liked it a little bit more than
so much
group.
More. So I like it's terrible in comparison, but no one would have wanted to come join the Emotional Intelligence Initiative. But what we do with Good Vibe Tribe is we started holding weekly meetings. And it's an interdisciplinary approach to wellness. So we do different things like yoga, meditation, mindfulness. We'll do Tai Chi, movement. People come in lecture. We'll invite the monks and nuns come. And we'll have dialogue with them.
Oh, my God. That's so cool.
So we try to mix it up and do different things every meeting. Like sometimes we'll have everyone bring in their favorite poem and we'll discuss it. Or everyone will bring in their favorite quotes and we'll discuss them. So it's just an incredible way for us to just connect and be deeply, deeply connected to each other and for people to be vulnerable. And I know the word safe space gets thrown around a lot, but it's truly a safe space in the way that we have so many people come in and just be so open and free to express themselves and to cry and to feel emotion and to feel supported. And it's just so loving and powerful, and we're just really grateful that people feel comfortable coming in and really feeling and being.
And this is run by students?
It's all run by students.
For students?
For students.
Only for students.
It says anyone, it's open to anyone, but we ultimately have mostly students. Other people have come, like grad students, we've had people like professors come, but we mostly have students. That's just the our audience that mm-hmm. usually comes. And we always have like the same format and a different format. So it's like a little bit of both. So we have every meeting is the first 20 minutes or so we'll have check-ins where everyone will go around and talk about how they're feeling, how their weeks are going. And then we'll do 10 minutes of meditation led by different people in the group. So it's cool. I get a little mix up. And then the last 30 minutes is always a different theme.
Mm-hmm.
So we have like the first half the same, second half different.
That's really cool. How do you, how was the amount of people who usually show up for that?
So it's grown a lot. It used to be around 5 to 7 people, but now it's around 10 to 15 per week.
Okay. So it's not 400 people. So that's good. Because I don't know if everybody can check in.
Yeah. No. So 400 people in the group me are people who pay attention to the content.
Right. Well, that makes sense.
But so there's like definitely a different community who shows up consistently to meetings.
Mm-hmm.
But we also have events on campus. We went last semester, two semesters ago, we went to a sorority with like 100 women and we led their sorority chapter meeting and we did activities and exercises with them. So we go to freshman dorms. We do lots of different things. We have a bunch of different initiatives as well. We're doing like a video series with where we're interviewing different professors. We're starting an initiative called the Chief Mindfulness Officer, so that we bring mindfulness, we create or teach a person in each club around campus how to teach mindfulness to their clubs, so that people just go to their own clubs and there's mindfulness just right for them. And so they don't have to go out of their way to learn mindfulness.
That's really cool. That's amazing. So the good the Good Vibe Tribe, is it now a network of tribes through nationwide? Is that my understanding?
We're starting two more. So we're in the process. We started one at Columbia this past semester, and we're starting one at UT Austin, which is Longhorns.
And you have connections to those. This is amazing.
Yeah. And so we have the systems in place as well. So we have, you know, all of the processes, you know, written out of exactly how we went about. So like the systems of how to actually start so that it can be replicated.
Right. This is, how do you feel about, I mean, can you imagine? I mean, you probably can because you're sitting right here and you're living through that. But to me, it's just so amazing that at some point here you were not able to handle life, quote unquote. And then you're have this crack in your heart and you let the light in, and then you're going through this transformation, and now you're lighting up the candles all over the nation. I mean, how does it feel?
Wow, it feels pretty good. I'm becoming more grateful of it. It's hard to process it because the day-to-day life, you kind of get mixed in things, but in the overall, in the overall scope of things, it's truly remarkable. Yeah, I'm really grateful. I feel really happy about it. And it's only expanding from here, which is crazy.
This is amazing. Yeah. But it's also, to a degree, I'm sure there is so much open space for something like that to come in. Because, I mean, I'm sure we will all know, unfortunately, you're not the only one who has been struggling with some of the mental health and depression issues, because it's such a prevalent issue nowadays. And so many, I think I read a statistic maybe this morning, like 18.5% of adults report being depressed at certain time in their life, and that's a reported statistic, right? And so we all know that, I mean, nobody asked me if I'm depressed, so I don't know if I'm counted in that. So obviously that's minus one. So I'm sure that the real numbers are much more than that, and it's such a crazy issue with the kind of life that we live today, and with the stress and continued expectations and the anxiety that everybody's experiencing. Mm-hmm. There's so much need for that. Why do you think that is? Why do you think as a nation we experience so much anxiety?
Oh, I think there are a lot of things. I think the loss of connection with each other is just one of the biggest things. I think families aren't as connected as they used to be. I think technology has separated us and made us feel more separate in ways that we were always on a device. I mean, at 13 years old, like usually is like the average age or something like that, where people will start their device, and it's addicting. Like it's literally, these devices are created to addict us. And it's not the only thing, you know. Society is complex, but we don't learn about how to use our phones responsibly. We don't learn in school how to process our emotions.
Yeah.
We don't learn emotional intelligence. We learn how to get a job, but I don't know if we even learn that anymore. I think there are so many things. I think, you know, in college especially, we have so much thrown at us, so much responsibility, where, you know, being at any university, you have such a high degree of stress just placed on you from just the work alone. And then you have to figure out, who am I as a person? Like, where does that, like, no, there's no, there's not a lot of guidance, I don't think, for a lot of people. And so there's, I could just go on. I mean, I don't want to be negative, but I think there are a lot of things that we can work on as a society. I think we can, we ultimately have to be, again, be the change we want to see in the world. We have to go within ourselves and cleanse our inner space of what's holding us back and let the love in, like you said, the crack in our heart. I love that. And from there, I think we can be, once we have a foundation ourselves, we can go out and understand more about what's actually going on. I think ultimately it's just like the Power of Now talks about. It's a very simple, I mean, it's a very it seems complex because our minds make it complex, but it's ultimately a misidentification with what we really are, of who we really are, and being so lost in our thoughts, and it's so lost in our emotions, so lost in our actions, so lost in our situations, and not realizing that there's just the present moment that we have to really manage everything. It's not to say, just throw away everything, all your future plans, throw away, nothing in the past matters. It's not that. It's how do you healthfully deal with process, rest in the present moment, and move from there.
Yeah. Are you a fan of Sam Harris?
Sam Harris.
Oh my God. If I'm going to be the one introducing you to Sam Harris, it's going to be amazing. But oh my God. I just recently I was aware of him before, but he's an amazing podcast and he's an amazing writer as well. Mm-hmm. You would really enjoy his stuff. But that he has a PhD in neuroscience and he talks a lot about mindfulness from a very scientific perspective, but he has a lot of really, really great insights. So that what the way that you just expressed that about our minds running and running and running and us never being never being in the present moment kind of reminds me of that. So, but yeah, I agree. It's as you said, it's not that, you know, it's not that it's not important about to like plan, I don't know, to do your budget or to plan for your job tomorrow, or it's like, it is important to reflect on your mistakes yesterday, but there has to be a balance. We came from times where we were blessed to have times of boredom where we could allow the emotions to rise and pass naturally. But now we're never bored anymore. We stare at our phones all the time. And then when we don't, we obsess about what's tomorrow, what's yesterday, you choose, you know? And then, like, the fact that we're never, ever in the present moment, is, as you said, it is so true. It's what kind of keeps us so detached.
Yeah. It's a sense of being overstimulated and finding ourselves in a cycle of escapism.
Mm-hmm.
And always trying to run away. It's such a small shift of your awareness, because your attention isn't, we don't want to face uncomfortable feelings. Like, why? That's not quote unquote fun. But burying ourselves in television, burying ourselves in music, even and reading, like stimulation, looking at our phones. Our society is built around how can we stimulate people instead of how can we slow down and process what we're experiencing. It's just not built in that way. So we have to take back this autonomy for ourselves, or else no one will.
I just heard this phrase today, and it really stood out to me, that humans, we were not built to be satisfied. Like, from just biological perspective, we were not built to be satisfied, that our happiness is fully dependent on our expectations that always adjust to our conditions. So no matter what our conditions are, we always set expectations that are higher than that, and then we get disappointed and get unhappy. So that being present and being here and detaching from your mind and not having expectations or having appropriate expectations is the ability to manage that level of satisfaction that we can get from the present moment. Yeah, that's so interesting.
Wow.
Tell me, okay, So now you're working, so you finished your degree, and what was it in?
Yes. So I studied interdisciplinary studies, mm-hmm. which is where you get to pick a topic and study it from multiple subjects. Mm-hmm. And I focused, my topic was how individuals share meditation and mindfulness with internet technologies. So really understanding the ways that meditation, when it's shared with, you know, computers, when it's shared with apps, you know, how is it taught differently? How is it received differently? How is it different learning as an individual just through your phone compared to when you're learning in a group setting or mm-hmm. things like that? What are the religious implications of meditation being packaged as a commodity and being sold? So things like that.
That is so interesting.
Yeah.
That, I mean, it's so applicable in today's age, but yeah. what are, I don't even know how to begin to wrap my head around it, especially
yeah, me
like
neither.
the religious topic. It's so interesting. So what are some of the things that you learned or some of maybe unexpected facts or something that stood out for you?
I learned a lot about the positive aspects of mm-hmm. being able to share meditation. I mean, I come from an angle where so much of my practice is how did I learn this through my technology? So although I do see a lot of, it's a very mixed bag, there are a lot of negative things. When things are represented, they're never represented in the way that they're originally intended to be. But that's not the purpose of representation. When something in the media is taken as a news article, it's never going to report the capital T truth. So it's like when something like meditation, which stems from a Buddhist tradition, is taken out of its context, doesn't have its morality around it, doesn't have the ideas of karma, doesn't have the ideas of rebirth, stuff like that, is sold an app like Headspace, what happens? Is it devoid of morality? Maybe not, but they're teaching like mindfulness to people in the military so people can shoot more mindfully. So it's like, it's a very interesting thing of like taking something out of context and being able to apply it. So just things like that. I can go on and on.
Wow, that is really interesting. So to me, the way I look at it is that through technology, I can see how we can transfer and help people adapt the skill of meditation and mindfulness, right? So the techniques around it.
Yes.
And it seems like that could be applicable, just like everything else you can learn online, Coursera, Headspace, 10% Happier, Will, any other meditation or learning apps. And I get that. But how do you, as you said, how do you transfer that? Yeah. For those who believe there is more than just the words and techniques, how do you transfer the energy?
Yeah, that's an amazing question. I was going to say, I think that the people who are sharing these techniques have to be very well versed in the background, in the traditions from which these practices are stemming from. So, for example, if a meditation practice that stems from Buddhism is being shared, that person knows a lot about Buddhism. For example, Headspace does a great job. Andy, the meditation teacher, spent like 10 years in different monasteries around the world. I trust him. I don't know. I just feel like he really gets it. And the way that he shares, I think he does share the morality behind it before and after the meditations as well.
And so I'm sorry, I'm going to interrupt you. And I get the morality. I get the things that you can share by speaking the words.
Yeah.
But energy. What about the things that you can share by...
being with someone.
Yeah. So, I don't know. So, like, the closest that I came... So, I mean, I do the meditation. I use Headspace right now. So, I get that part. And I get the technique and meditation around it. And I love Andy as well. But I guess the closest that I came to with being on the receiving end of the meditation shared through technology, where I also felt like some energy behind it, was I used to do, I haven't gone as much recently because of school, but I used to do meditation at the Siddha Yoga Center. I don't know if you've heard of them, but they're local here. I think there are several more nationwide. And the guru lives in India or in New York. I should probably know that, but I don't. I think she frequently comes to New York. I don't know where she lives right now, in India or New York. But basically it was the New Year's meditation. It was like chanting and meditation style. And we had a recording. It wasn't the live translation, but she basically recorded chanting. And then we were played their recording and we were chanting with their recording with a group here in Atlanta. And I can tell you that the moment I heard her voice, I was somewhere else.
Wow.
And then it was a recording. And I don't know, whatever the sound system there was, that place doesn't look like a nightclub by any means. So I don't know if they have any magic speakers in there. I don't think so. But when I heard her voice, I had no idea what she was saying because it was not in English. But I had like a frequency resonating throughout my body that was so powerful that I did not know what to do with myself. So how do you do that with an app?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's the person. It's the person who's transmitting it.
Right.
I mean, I have a guru. His name's Muji. I listen to his recordings, and I'm taking to another place.
Yeah.
Altogether. Like, I have very... I don't know if it's a similar experience, but
I think it is. I mean, I have goosebumps right now just talking about it.
Yeah, like I go through an issue, I'm going through a hard time or something, and I'll just pop on one of his satsangs, they're called.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Yeah, and so I'll just listen to his voice and the way he carries himself, the way he talks to his followers, his students, and think like just the tension just melts away. It's just a spiritual experience is the only way to describe it. It's through my phone. It's through my, like, I have Muji in my pocket. Like, I have my guru, like, it's in my pocket.
I love it.
It's crazy. So it's the person who's, if the person is truly at a speaking from a place where they're just that connected and that deeply in harmony, then I think that it can work in any way.
Yeah. No, I agree
don't think
with
it's
you.
The same. I don't think it's the same as if you're in their presence, though.
I mean, I'll probably just fly away into space if I wasn't in presence or something like that.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. I think it's, I mean, I don't have the science and or evidence based anything to back that up. But I think what I'm saying is I think it's possible.
Mm.
As crazy as it sounds, I think it's possible. Mm. And like, I mean, even when I listen to Guru Singh, we just talked about Guru Singh earlier, but even when I listen to him, like, I mean, he has the power behind his words. Like, there is something that transpires somehow through the wires and electricity, and maybe it's not even about the time and space, but whatever it is that travels through that, and maybe it's just being on the same frequency at the moment. And being able to receive that message, but there is something that can be transferred through technology, and it's really interesting. The way that it was explained to me in that Siddha Yoga Center, because I think, and again, I should probably know it better, but I haven't really studied it carefully, but it's the same, you know, they call the chanting, the satsang, and Shakti, right?
Shakti,
yeah. Yeah, so it was explained to me that if the guru is truly powerful, it doesn't matter where in the world he is, he can receive the Shakti just from the picture or from chanting the name or just... So, yeah. I mean, I guess it's just so interesting. But it's such an interesting topic, and I'm just, like, amazed that you can, like, go to school for that.
I know. It was incredible just being able to study it and write about it and learn and research it, and it was a true, like, pleasure. It was amazing.
That is really cool. Yeah. Well, that's a good sign. I guess education can be cool these days.
Yeah. It is.
Thankfully. And then tell me, what are you doing with it now? So you're starting.
Yes.
Your
so
coaching.
I've launched mm-hmm. a coaching business where I'm working one on.
Thank you.
It's been incredible. So I'm working one on one with people to mm-hmm. really just continue what I've been doing with Good Vibe Tribe, passing these messages forward, but also helping people understand how they can tune into a deeper sense of contentment, like we were talking about, a deeper sense of satisfaction, while still being able to look ahead and set goals for themselves and have someone to keep them accountable. Because that's, I think, one of the biggest things is we don't have people holding us accountable for where we know we are, we want to go, and who we are. So it's been a really powerful experience because it also made me have to be on my tip top, because if I'm going to be a foundation for others, I have to be a foundation for myself. And it's just been such a period of growth and learning, and it's been wonderful working with the people that I have. They're all just such lights in their own way. So.
And tell me a little bit more, maybe as we are talking, if people are falling in love with your voice and with you and they want to reach out.
Yes.
So there are so many different styles of meditation,
yeah.
and there are so many different types of wellness coaches and
yeah.
goal settings. Can you talk a little bit more about your philosophy or how it is that you work or who do you think would be the perfect person
Yeah.
that you could be a teacher for or a guide?
Yeah. So I work with young adults mostly who want guidance through, they just feel a lack of satisfaction. They're interested in wellness. They know that there's something deeper pulling them towards wanting something better for themselves, but they just don't really know how to get there. They have these goals. They understand that there are ways that they can be improving their wellness, things like improving their nutrition, things like meditating more. Although I don't delve into meditation, I mostly look at like their ways of thinking, their ways of speaking, their ways of their stories that they tell themselves, how to rewrite the things we tell ourselves, how to shift the relationships that we have with our thoughts. Things like that. So, for example, each of my sessions, I'll always guide people through two meditations, one at the beginning, one at the end. One usually of grounding, and then based upon what we talked about in our session, I'll usually do a tailor-made meditation at the end. So someone's worried about the way that time is just stressing them out, we'll do one based on that. If someone wants to develop more compassion or gratitude, we can do a gratitude or compassion meditation. Someone's doesn't feel worthy, we can do a meditation where the people felt the most proud of themselves, the most worthy, visualizing that for themselves, and then just entering that moment and knowing that they can bring themselves back into that anytime, that source is available to them at any time. And so really just helping people familiarize themselves with that deep sense of contentment within themselves that's always there, so that they can tap into that. And it doesn't have to come from something externally. It comes from within, and it's always available. So anyone who's interested in that, I would say
it comes from within and it is always available.
Yeah.
If only 7 billion people on this earth knew that,
we'd have a very different picture of what our world looks like.
Do you think?
Oh my God, yeah. Absolutely. And it's also tailor-made. It doesn't have to be, like we're talking a lot about spirituality naturally, because I think we're both pretty spiritual people. But it doesn't have to be, like I have people who we don't talk too much about spirituality. It's more about goal setting and,
Well, I think after everything we said, we probably already lost all the people who are not into spirituality.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah, no, it's so funny.
They're like, turn off.
They're like, nope, I'm not interested in this.
Guru in the pocket?
Guru in the pocket? No. But yeah, I do have a wide variety of people who I work with, which is interesting. It's usually in this niche, again, of young adults, people who are high achieving, interested in wellness, people who are just unsatisfied with where they are and know that, you know, they just need guidance. They don't need anything from me. Like, no one needs a coach in a sense. Everyone has it within themselves. But, you know, I have a coach myself. Like, I know how powerful it can be to have someone there with you along the way and pointing you in the right direction. Like I said, immersing yourself in the practice, theory, and culture of wellness so that you can really be well-rounded in what you want to do and feel the progress and see the progress and experience the progress. Like, there's nothing like that. And so just being able to really tangibly feel and experience that is what I'm doing with my clients and people I'm working with.
No, that's really cool. It's really powerful. But I definitely second you on that. It's so important because of our lifestyles today, and I'm so guilty of that myself. I would set up this goal and then I would achieve it, and like in an hour I would be like moving on to something else. And you know, we don't always take time to recognize how far it is that we've come and how much it is that we've grown. And sometimes it is because we're not taking time, and then sometimes it's because it's just hard to see the thing when you're inside the thing. You know, yes. you have to have the help of somebody else to kind of get that like step back perspective and see how far you moved, because you may not be able to see that. And it is so important, because it is so empowering, and it is so gratifying to know that the all the effort and all the sweat and tears and work that you put into something that is actually paying off. And it also empowers you to be stronger and move forward as a stronger person and own your success going forward as well.
Yeah.
It's all important.
Yeah. I usually try to, whenever I attain a major goal or whenever one of my clients reaches a major goal, I try to tell them to take 30 seconds to a minute and just be grateful for that. Just be like, okay, wow, this happened. I can't believe this. Because we, like you said, we just have the tendency, we're never satisfied.
Right.
So we just have the tendency, okay, what's next? What's next? What's next? Even in just our day-to-day life, it's all about what's next.
Oh,
instead
yeah.
of not even what's now, just being. You don't have to do anything. You just are. And that's beautiful.
Yeah. No, that is so true. That is so true. I mean, because if you think about it, like thousands and thousands of years ago, if we're not thinking about the next thing, we'll probably be eaten by a tiger or go hungry. Yeah. You know, so it's like...
eaten by a tiger.
Yeah, but like it makes sense.
True.
It makes sense why we are wired that way.
Evolutionarily.
It just doesn't serve us in our today. It just doesn't serve us well. And we have to understand the wiring inside our brains and to work with it instead of either try to look away and be oblivious to it and let that run us, or even worse, try to run to run against it and like continue shaming ourselves or you know, blaming ourselves for being human.
Yeah.
So I understand how people who are recognizing and are willing to accept help are able to reach out to you or maybe to reach out for other resources. But how do people come to the realization that that's what they're doing and or that's what they may benefit from? Because I feel like there is... Yeah, there is a degree of people that are depressed or that are in a lot of pain or that are isolated and they know it. But I think there is a lot more people that are suffering, but they don't even allow themselves to open their eyes to it.
Yeah.
How do people find that there is the door that they can go through to enter this different kind of life and world?
Yeah. I think they have to experience something where they will want to change something themselves. Well, they'll be fed up with their reality in a sense. Like, this is not what I want anymore. Like, this doesn't have to be, and I can make a change. It's like you're more likely to wake up from a nightmare than just a regular dream.
You just blew my mind. That is so true.
Yeah. But there are also other ways as well.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
Sorry, I don't. Like alarms. Burst your bubble.
Alarm clocks.
No, but that is so true. Because, I mean, this is ultimately, I mean, woke is not called woke for no reason, you know? Like, so many of us are just like walking around asleep in like some dream world, and most of it is no good.
Like, you, like, I walk around and I'll just look deeply into people's eyes and you just don't see, like, you see kind of like a glazed, it's like zombies. And I don't want to say like people are just walking around in the zombie world and they're just nothing or anything like that. I'm not, you know, we're all equals. Yeah. I don't see a sense of like a deep sense of happiness, and it's sad because we all have that capacity. I also think that being around people who are truly deeply happy and emanate joy, that's why we have to be the change. If you're someone who's just in a regular dream, and if you're around someone who's living, you might be like, all right, I got to change something. That might be their wake up. But if they might not have to sink to the level of, not everyone has to sink to the level of, I'm depressed. You know, I had to leave school for a year to walk into this. Not everyone has to do that by any means, because that's not going to happen to everybody. But I also think the fact that we have so many people who are going through mental or experiencing mental illness, so many people who are, you know, not living these low-level dream lives, low-level regular dream life, means that there are going to be a lot of people waking up. I truly believe that we're on the verge of something we're going to have a shift in humanity's awareness and love and peace in this world. Because if we don't, we're not going to survive many more rounds of this.
Believe that
because
too.
We're destroying the earth. But that's another topic.
Yeah. Oof. Yes, I agree. But yeah. I'm looking at the book that's called Transcending the Levels of Consciousness. But I agree. I do believe that we're waking up slowly, a little slower than.
Yeah.
But there is more awareness, and it's great to see. I mean, like, you're such an amazing example of that.
Thank you so much with
how young you are, and with how much and how far you've come, and how much you realize for yourself already, and now. Again, I mean, you're like lighting up the candles nationwide. And then, like,
wow.
Talking about, you know, gurus in your pockets and like leveraging the powers. But this is where it is, you know? Like, we don't have to ostracize technology or whatever the invention it is just because it's new. I mean, change is inevitable. It's not about going against it, resisting it, or, you know, trying to hold on to whatever was 5,000 years ago. No, let's take it, let's run with it. Let's utilize it and make whatever the best things that we have and use it to spread all over the world. Why not? That's what it's made for. You know, we can make war, we can make love with it. So let's make the latter.
Yeah, that was amazing. Thank you.
I also want you to give some advice for people who are like, okay, well, obviously mindfulness is the way to go. I want to wake up. So what it is that I do, like, how do I start? Because, like, I don't know. I talked to my mom about mindfulness. She's like, I cannot sit for 10 minutes. Like, I don't even know what to do. And then, like, I hear a lot of people say that because, like, they don't know what they're supposed to do, and then they just don't do it. And it's hard to explain to people that actually you have to do nothing. And that's what you do. Like, you actually do nothing for 10 minutes. You just sit and you just be and you just do nothing. But people need to do something. So
right.
Like, give some suggestions on how to start.
Okay. I'll do three suggestions.
Okay.
One would say, I'll just talk about meditation itself. First off, I would say you can't be bad at meditation, because that's a very common misconception, so people don't want to start. Because when we get distracted, that's a natural thing. That's our minds are busy. But every time we bring our attention back to what we're doing, every time we bring our attention back to the exercise, the breath, the voice that we're hearing, whatever we're doing, that is flexing the meditation muscle itself. That is doing one rep. That is meditation itself. So you can't be bad at meditation if your mind wanders. You're good at meditation if your mind wanders. So that's number one. Number two, I would say take time, separate a period of time for yourself every day, maybe 10 minutes, 20 minutes, an hour, whatever you feel is good for self-care. Just slow down, to put your phone on airplane mode, to just check in with yourself, to tune in, what do I need? What feels good for me in this moment? What do I love to do? Can I just put a song on and dance for 10 minutes? Like, oh, that's a long song. But, you know, just do things that you love to do. Be outside more. Just take more time for self-care. Be in tune with yourself. Create. Take time to create. There's so many little things you can do. But just know that it's going to be okay and that this will work out, and that I would just read too. Reading is helpful. Find a book that you love that you can learn about. Exercise. Try to exercise a little bit each day, whether it's, you know, yoga or running, or try to exercise a little bit each day. That's a lot of little tips, but.
And eat a plant-based diet.
Eat a plant-based diet. You know what it is. Yeah, vegetarian. I'm vegetarian, I can proudly say. I'm trying to be vegan.
We'll talk.
I had pizza today, so I don't know.
I'll make you vegan pizza next time.
Okay, I'm down. Blaze has vegan cheese. Check it out. No, but I would say there are so many resources out there. Just be open-minded and start to look for them. There are so many meditation apps. There's so many awesome books to read. Just start being curious. Be curious. That is such a beautiful thing. The world will open up to you if you just keep your mind open and start setting the intention to be healthier and happier. Because once you start being aware, you start setting the intention, you can move from there. And if you really want to start being more mindful of your thoughts and emotions, I think that's one of the most valuable things you can do. I would read the book Eckhart Tolle, The Power of Now. It's a little bit on the more spiritual end. So if you're more interested in something a little bit more, that's a little bit less obscure, I would really recommend Untethered Soul by Michael Singer. Incredible book. That's what I got.
That's amazing. Tell me more about how to set an intention, because we hear that a lot. What does it mean? How do you set an intention to be healthy and well?
Yeah. So I think that we all have, I think goal setting is really important. So first of all, what it is that you want and where are you on that path? I do this thing with my people I work with where we talk about two to three things that in your wellness and wellness goals that you have, and then two to three life goals that you have. And then we go through that, and I write out hear, see, and feel. And imagine yourself, see what you would see with these goals. Hear what you would hear with these goals. Feel what you would feel when these goals are occurring. And just visualize those things. That is how you set an intention. It's more than just, this is what I want. You have to really feel and see and hear. People are all of our senses are very powerful. And something you can do daily is set intentions. Put a little sticky note on your mirror for the next week, or for something that you really want to work on. breathe deeply, for example. You can put that on your mirror. Every time you go to the mirror, you breathe deeply. Every time, but you start thinking about these things more. You can set intentions for your day and really see how you can experience these intentions that you have for yourself on a deeper level than just your mind, how you can physically experience them if you can hear, see, or feel them.
That's really cool. Yeah. That is so, so, so powerful because our mind is capable of just so much more than we think. And there's so many things and processes that are like running behind this.
Yeah, there's so much.
Yeah, that alignment that happens. And yeah, this is very powerful. Thank you for explaining that.
Yeah, thank you for bringing that out of me. Sometimes you don't know what's in there until someone brings it out of you.
Okay. Well, I have one more question that I will ask at the end. But before that, is there anything else that we haven't discussed that you want to focus on, talk about, or share with the audience?
I don't think so. I think we covered everything.
I don't know about everything, but we covered some ground.
Yeah, we covered the things that I would like to talk about.
Okay. Well, the name of the podcast is Follow Your Kind. So we talked about it before. I truly believe that we are all brought into this world with an intention to be kind and wired for kindness. But through some of the experiences, we may become distanced from that intention, or perhaps maybe we don't think through all of our actions and therefore not always the most kind versions of ourselves. So I'd like to know, what does kindness mean for you, and how do you get to follow it in your daily life?
Kindness has to come from, kindness comes from what we really are, who we really are. By tapping into that which we are, our natural awareness, sense of being, like you said, it's innate. We have an innate compassion and innate kindness within ourselves. And so by being loving, I think, by just being simply having the desire to just, as any way you can, to just share love, to be kind, that's how it manifests. Being smiling at someone at the store, you know, doing a good deed just because it's available to you. Being as open as you can to helping others, because that's why we're here on this earth.
I love it. That's beautiful. Well, thank you so much for your time, Jacob. I wish you the best of luck, and I'm sure that is not the last time that you're on this podcast.
Thank you so much. And shameless plug at the end, my website is jaquawellness.com. Check it out.
I will include that in the show notes as well. So awesome. Yes, absolutely check him out.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
For more information, you can go to followyourkind.com or follow me on Instagram at kindchristina. Please also subscribe to the show and give me a good review. Thanks for stopping by.